You know, I was dying on the other 2445.
Senate Judiciary Committee, Wednesday, May 22nd, 5 p.m.
All this material.
Where are we? Oh, good. Springer and I can listen to the vaccine bill, right?
Another one of our old favorites. Back for a reprise.
I keep coming back. Okay. Need a different color pen for the evening. Work session. Who do we have? Who's left over? Well, we probably need to wait on the vaccine bill till we get more than Springer and I. So we'll let them breathe a little bit. Who's here? Do we want to do the real estate bill?
I think so.
Okay, let's take up House Bill 2127. It was left over from this afternoon. We'll have Frederick, let's see, who's here? Stan Mayfield from the Real Estate Agency, and let's see where we go. House Bill 2127.
Steve, Springer. Hi. You picked up some files off the Judiciary Committee. Right. Because those are the curious ones this afternoon. Okay. And if there's anything else we can work on, do that. And you got my bills back in resources at 5:30. Okay. 5:30. Thanks.
There are amendments. Why don't you go ahead, Stan, and tell us what this bill is about.
Madam Chair, my name is Stan Mayfield. I'm a special programs manager for the Real Estate Agency. Excuse me. What you have before you is I have a two-page memorandum attached to a hand-engrossed version of 2127 that includes some dash B4 amendments. To give you an idea where the bill came from, it passed the House. In the B-engrossed version, at that time I was contacted by members of the industry regarding some concerns they had with the bill. We've met on two or three occasions and developed the dash B4 amendments, and there's agreement on those between the industry. The purpose of the bill is primarily consumer protection, although it does increase some regulatory functions as well.
When?
The memorandum goes section by section through, and so I won't try to do that unless you have some concerns regarding each section. It's my understanding that there is another amendment proposed. You'll find my reference to it on the top of the second page in the memorandum regarding our access to records. It's our position that access to records for a regulatory agency is fairly fundamental, and we would oppose any attempt to modify that language. It's my understanding there may be amendment to do that. Other than that, there is general agreement on the dash four amendments.
What access to records do you have now?
The access to records in here is in page 9, lines 15 and 16 is the reference. It's basically the same type of authority that we have in our other land development laws for subdivisions, condominiums, and timeshares, also real estate and escrow laws. I've cited those provisions in the memorandum for your reference, but it just allows us access to the sales records so that if we receive a complaint and need to investigate it, we can do that. I would point out one correction in the amendments. There was a misspelling of a word. On page 3 of my hand-engrossed version, at line 10, near the end of the line there, the word purchases should be purchasers.
Line 10 of what?
Page 3, line 10, at the end of that line, the word purchases should be purchasers.
Bill, I don't find it. Are you talking about the amendments or the bill?
My hand engrossed version.
Okay. We're looking at the amendments, I think.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hand engrossed version, page 3, line 10. Okay, no wonder. There we go.
I still don't see
anything. This doesn't seem to be there. Oh, we're blind.
Page 3, line 10 reads, the non-disturbance agreement may be enforced by...
No, this is the hand engrossed bill, 2127.
Right. Page 3.
Line 10 says, any bond must be issued by a surety authorized to do business in this state having sufficient net worth, too. I think somebody hand engrossed the wrong bill then.
Oh, no, that's a different hand engrossed version. On my memorandum that I handed you, there's a two-page memorandum behind that is a hand engrossed version with the B4 amendments hand engrossed.
What's the B5 amendment?
That's the one that I referred to as the one that is wanting to modify the language. The B4 amendment is the one that I've worked on with the members of the industry who are here.
Okay.
And that's the one that Mr. Taylor requested that I do a hand engrossed version for you.
Thank you. We've got two hand engrossed versions.
Oh.
Here, and it would be useful to
okay.
Now know that you're talking about the one that's in the back of your memo.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize
that.
You had
Thank
another
you.
One.
Okay, B4 amendments, hand engrossed, page
3, line 10.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Purchaser, is that what you want?
Right.
Senator, who are you, Springer?
Right. I don't know if you want to interrupt with other questions now about
yes, that's
the presentation,
fine.
If that's okay. Okay. Who is it that was representing the proprietary interest here that you were working with to come up, I guess, with these amendments?
Madam Chair, Senator Springer, I was working with, and they're here to testify today, Fred Mendoza, who is representing Thousand Trails and NACO West outside counsel, Claire Drozdick, who is House counsel for them, and Jim Kula, who represents, is an Oregon attorney here who represents some Oregon owners. Also here to testify is president of the Washington Campground Owners Association. They have 5 campgrounds registered in the state, too. I was not working with him directly. It's my understanding that Mr. Mendoza, Ms. Drozdick, and Mr. Kula were in contact with all the Oregon representatives and had run all this material by them.
Okay. I see that apparently Section 11 has been taken out. Why don't you tell me why you thought it ought to be there, and then maybe the folks who wanted it out can tell us why that has to come out.
The original purpose of that provision also relates to another provision in the bill. The bill originally required a fee interest to be conveyed along with the campground membership. The original intent was, I think, twofold. One, to protect individuals where the campground had gone through a bankruptcy proceeding. With a simple membership, they would not have any secured interest in a piece of property. They simply had a membership interest. Whereas with a secured piece of interest in secured property, they would have something. In discussing this with the campground industry, there are two ramifications to this. Number one, by requiring a fee interest, it will essentially, as they've represented to me, shut down a lot of campground sales. Only one other state, Wisconsin, has done this, and it's virtually closed out the campground industry, at least for several of the firms. Second is that it may not actually provide individuals with any security in the bankruptcy situation because of the way the bankruptcy court treats campground memberships. We then discussed other ways to reach some protection, and we believe we've done that in sections 4 and in the new section that was added. In section on page 7, I guess it is, as part of section 7, that we think that those protections will be of benefit should we run into any either going out of business or bankruptcy problems.
Okay. Well, you made reference to comparable interests, such as a timeshare. Does a timeshare person take a fee interest?
Madam Chair, Senator Springen, yes, there's two types of timeshares. You can either take a deeded interest or you can have a right-to-use interest, but both of those are recognized. And the bankruptcy law, first of all, I need to tell you I'm not that familiar with bankruptcy law. It's my understanding that there is a special designation in the bankruptcy law for timeshare interest where there is not for campground memberships. So it is treated differently.
Okay. Well, I'm going to want to hear a little bit more on those issues, I guess, when other people come up and talk at us.
Good. Yeah, we need to.
Thank you.
Anything else?
No, I realize you've got a tight schedule. I've tried to outline a little bit in a short memorandum. I'll be happy to answer any questions and be available during the latter part of the testimony. I think it's a bill that we need in order to properly regulate in this area. There are several holes in the law that we're trying to fill here. To give you one example, if someone wants to run a campground and doesn't register with us, there's no way we can prevent them from running that campground. We have some limited enforcement authority here, and that's one of the purposes of the bill, is to try to allow us to better regulate the area.
Okay, let's hear from Mr. Mendoza and bring up whoever you've got with you.
Thank you. My name is Fred Mendoza. I'm an attorney from Seattle. I represent Thousand Trails, Inc. and NACA West Corporation of Oregon, two operators of membership campgrounds in this state. We oppose House Bill 2127 as it was passed out of the House. We support 2127 with the engrossed B4 amendments that have just been introduced by Mr. Mayfield. To address the question that is on Senator Springer's mind, we got involved in this about 3 weeks ago after the bill had already passed through the House and was on its way here to a Senate. This hearing was continued so that we would have an opportunity to discuss it. The answer to Senator Springer's question is, with respect to companies like Thousand Trails and NACA West that have combined 200,000 members across the country, all of whom have interrelated rights to use all of the 80 camp resorts that these two companies have throughout the country, if we at this time create a new system solely for the state of Oregon where members who purchase after the effective date of this act become fee owners in the property, we are in effect creating a class system within the within our network that creates differing rights and differing classes of individuals. So we are now changing the product, and it's been our position that, and still is our position, that the state should regulate the product and not create the product. Furthermore, the fact that members in a membership campground receive a fee interest, an undivided interest or some other fee interest, has been found not to really protect their interest in a bankruptcy, which was the purpose of including it in this amendment in the first place, according to the Department of Real Estate, to ensure that in an insolvency or a failure of a membership campground, that the members who had paid their hard-earned money to buy their membership would in fact be protected, and that hasn't been the case. And the reason for that is all campgrounds, very few campgrounds, are ever owned outright. They're all either mortgaged or highly financed with their membership paper, their receivables, and so there's really nothing to protect the members in event of a bankruptcy, except to put them down at the bottom of the chain. So there really isn't any practical distinction between the two. Make any sense? You may not agree with it, but does that make any sense?
Well, I don't pretend to know much, if anything, about these types of memberships. So, I think you make a good point. I'm just trying to sense whether this is a even-handed bargain that's struck, and mean in terms of your rights to enforce the contract vis-a-vis, you know, their rights to enforce their expectations. My sense is people pretty much, when they sign the contract with you, they're on the hook to fulfill their portion of the contract, and these individual consumers have few, if any, remedies if they decide that they don't like the deal. They're like anybody else. Once parties are assumed to understand and agree to the terms of the contract and it's enforceable. But, you know, if somebody goes out of business because they're not a good manager, these folks really don't have a remedy coming back at the larger partner to the contract.
That's, in effect, that's true. I think Senator Shoemaker, on another bill this afternoon, addressed that issue or alluded to that issue in the bankruptcy context. And that's true. There's very little that we can do at the state level to protect a member or anybody who has an executory contract in a bankruptcy context. I can relate to you that I've been involved with this industry for 8 years, and we're in an evolutionary process in the regulatory scheme here in Oregon, just like we were in Washington 5 years ago and in California the last couple of years. And we passed a new bill in California last year on the heels of a lot of bankruptcies since 1985, and there were at one time 50,000 members who were disenfranchised as a result of the bankruptcies. But the fact of the matter is there are the people who want to be members in a campground are so sought after that none of them ever become orphans. There is in this bill an orphan adoption section that has been placed in here that would require that any membership camping club operator who takes over after an insolvency or a bankruptcy of a campground that was previously registered must file a plan prior to receiving the registration, which outlines the terms and conditions under which they will offer the disenfranchised members a membership in their campground. And this is a unique provision to this state. This is a new one, and I'm sure it's going to work. The reason it's going to work is these people are sought after. All of the campground operators want the people who want to be members. So very few ultimately get disenfranchised unless they decide to go elsewhere. The unfortunate thing is during the insolvency and bankruptcy process, it's very touch and go for them. That's true, but there's really not much we can do about that at this point in time.
Okay, just kind of not a question to the bill, but more to the industry. Are the individual campgrounds, you know, through Oregon or most states, are those a franchise operation?
No. Most of them in Oregon, I believe there are 8 registered campgrounds in the state of Oregon. All but a couple of them are simply single-owner, single-resort organizations. There are 2 or 3, they're the 2 companies that I represent that are the largest in the industry, and then one other that have multi-resorts. But other than that, they're mostly single-resort, single-owner establishments, like Mr. Kula's next gentleman that's going to testify. He represents 3 of the single owners. So there's a diversity of interest here between them and us, too, but this bill would protect it legitimately protects the business while it also legitimately protects the consumer interest as well as we can at this point in time.
Thank you.
Bill.
Your amendments, Bill.
Excuse me,
pardon me, Madam Chair, yes. What you're saying is the amendments protect you, not the bill as it came to us.
Not the bill as it came to you. Okay. It would effectively put many companies out of business, and it will, in effect, disenfranchise a lot of people because you can't convert from a right-to-use sort of an operation to a fee-interest operation and accommodate the balance the interests of the members, the current ones versus the new ones.
Well, I'm sorry, I missed earlier. I forgot this was 5. I thought it was 7, as we traditionally have been. That's the reason for my tardiness, Madam Chair. I'm familiar with timeshares, and we're basically doing kind of a timeshare-only place that you can put your cot in your tent as opposed to a condominium or something, just roughly speaking. Now, what you're trying to drive... Okay, what say... that if you do get a fee interest in the time that you get your campsite, and as you said, many of these are highly leveraged and maybe on shaky financial ground, and you go belly up. Now, if I've got a fee simple interest in that, that makes me liable for the debts of the corporation.
There is a difference of opinion on that, but that opinion has been expressed many, many times, yes.
Well, I know that I am in the timeshares that I own.
You are an owner.
Yeah.
And so down the chain somewhere there is some potential liability. I would agree with you, Senator.
Okay.
But the main problem is you've got a member of my organization who has been a faithful right-to-use, let's say, member for 15 or 20 years coming to the resorts and using it, and all of a sudden a person who now purchases in 1991 after the effective date of this act has a fee interest, and he has a better interest theoretically than the people who have been supporting the organization for many, many years, and that it is a very difficult transition to make,
well,
if not impossible.
It's not a better position for the owner if you go bankrupt.
Pardon me?
It's not a better position if you go bankrupt.
No, not for the owner.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Okay.
Okay, other, Bill?
Sure, Ms. Mendoza, you mentioned earlier that in the case of a bankruptcy or foreclosure under this bill, the member would have a right to buy into the new person running the organization. Is that correct?
Yes.
But they may be required to pay a fee again. Is that not correct?
Yes.
They would not necessarily be getting into the new organization free of charge.
No. Okay, and quite frankly, that would probably not happen. And the reason that wouldn't happen is in the typical insolvency situation in this type of a business, what got the campground operator in trouble in the first place was either miscalculating the capitalization required for his project or writing contracts with members quickly and at low cost to get them in without really thinking about how much it was going to cost to operate that resort. And if you then require a future operator to give these members the same advantages that they had, yet require this operator to now operate the campground at a break even or profit, it's probably not going to happen. So they have to be given the opportunity to address it with a business plan that is fair for everyone. And you'll note in the amendments that we've drafted that the one key provision to the orphan adoption provision is that the terms and conditions under which we offer to the disenfranchised members a new membership cannot be any less favorable than the material terms and conditions which we offer to new members, so that they can't be second-class citizens, if you will. They have to be right up there with everybody else.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Who do we have? Claire?
Your
name for the record, please.
My name is Claire Drozdick, and I'm Associate General Counsel for Thousand Trails and NACO West. And most of my remarks have been addressed by Mr. Mendoza. I just want to emphasize one point, and that is that there is a difference between the types of operators that are involved, and for with Thousand Trails and NACO West, or NACO, that is, which are national organizations, there's some bit of misconception about what the product is that the consumer really wants and is purchasing. And while a fee interest might work if your average person is going into a place and wanting to go there each weekend, that's not the product that people that come to Trails or NACO are buying. They are buying access to a network, and it is a national network. They are not particularly interested in having a specific right in one resort. We have a large number of senior citizens that have purchased recreational vehicles, and this is a lifestyle for them. They may live in Oregon, they may purchase in Oregon, but they want to spend time in the Sun Belts, in Arizona, or in Southern California. Basically, owning a particular slice of property at one resort is not what it's all about. And even in your smaller organizations, they're buying access, they want through coast to coast, the same type of access to a network. So that fee ownership is not necessarily something even that the consumer wants. Now, the types of protections that are addressed in your non-disturbance provisions in the amended bill are really the areas that will give consumers the types of protections that they need. And they encourage the person that has provided the major financing for the campground operator to step into the shoes of the operator and take over his responsibilities. And you have to remember that the first thing that will happen in the event of insolvency and closure of resorts is that the people will stop paying. They are buying on retail installment sales contracts. Those contracts are extended out over a period of months. You close down the resorts, the security for that lender's financing has just gone down the tube. They are extremely interested in making sure that the operation of that resort will continue uninterrupted to continue their security unimpaired. And that we've attempted to deal with in the non-disturbance provisions here by providing that the lender will come in and continue to operate in the event of an insolvency or bankruptcy.
Okay. Are there any questions? Thank you very much. Is John Martin here?
Yeah.
Well, let's have James Kulik, both of you come up, and I want to get the other amendment here, and maybe we can talk about what, finally get a wrap-up if you are in disagreement with each other, or maybe you're just looking for additions.
Madam Chair, Senators, I'm James Kulik. I'm a practicing attorney with the firm of Kula & Rano in Lincoln City. We've represented the industry operators for several years, and were involved in registering some of the first people under the 1985 legislation. This amendment came as a surprise to us, but when we found out about it, we were working with Mr. Mayfield was very cooperative and working with us to come up with something that the industry could support. And by and large, the industry has.
So are you in disagreement with the Dash 4 amendments, or are you just you're offering an additional one?
Offering an additional one. So, yes, we can support the
Dash 4.
Dash 4.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful to get that on the record. So, why don't you go ahead, please, and either comment on the Dash 4 plus your 5 or just the 5, whichever you care to do.
We would just support the Dash 4. There was a lot of work that went into that. There was a question by Senator Springer on the fee interest. That was one of the provisions that would have been almost impossible for most of the Oregon operators that we represent to comply with. First of all, there was no definition of the fee interest, and many of our operators have purchased some small, some larger campgrounds on land sale contracts. As you know, land sale contracts, our people would be the equitable owner, not the legal owner. They simply wouldn't even have the power to provide for fee interest. Some of them are leased. They certainly wouldn't have that power. So there were all kinds of problems with the fee interest. And basically, the real estate commissioner's office had indicated finally then what they wanted to solve, the problems they wanted to solve, and that was some bankruptcies over the last few years that had left some people, presumably, without campgrounds. And I think the amendments that were put together solves those problems. So we can support the legislation with those amendments. We have a dash 5 proposed amendment that is an amendment to page 7. It's on page 7, section 10, subsection 2. And Mr. Mayfield's hand engrossed version, whatever would be easiest for you to look at.
We'll just look at Mayfield's.
Okay.
Figure out when it fits.
That would be on his page 9 at the bottom right hand corner. Okay. Page 9. Section 10, subsection 2.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that provision, the records of the sale of membership camping contracts shall be subject to inspection, is something obviously that that they had the provision for in the timeshare and subdivision law. We didn't have a problem with that legislation.